White Aryan Resistance calling. This is War Radio. War Radio. And we are at P.O. Box 65, Fallbrook, California, 92088. Our email address is warmetzger@sbcglobal.net. Our big war website is at resist.com. If you own a computer and you'd like to be on our daily e-zine list that we send out a news bulletin either every day or every other day sometimes, then you must email us at our email address and say subscribe. The Big War newspaper is $30 for 12 issues, and that's in the United States, and that's delivered to your door in a plain brown envelope. And if you're in Soviet Kanukistan, that's Canada, where the Jews connive and really figure out all their little moves they're going to make on the United States, then you're going to pay $40 for 1 year, and that will be first class to your door. Any other country around the world, it runs $50 U.S. dollars, cash or PayPal. Now, you can use PayPal to purchase any of our items that we advertise. So if you'll go to PayPal with a computer on the web, you simply sign up and then you can use your credit card. If you're sending checks, send them to John Metzger. Checks and money orders made to John Metzger do not make your checks to war. This radio show is either available from whiteplanet.org, where you can go on the internet and check the schedule, or you can purchase these radio shows, two of them back-to-back on 120-minute tape, cassette tape, at $8 donation. Or you can listen to our radio show on the telephone, yes, and that's at our phone 760-723-8996. And on that line, many of the questions and comments you make will be played on the radio show. If you don't have a cheap phone service, then try to find one, because actually it doesn't cost you that much for 1 hour on the telephone. Maybe $3 a week at the max. I wonder if you remember that videotape we had available called 14 Words or A Nation Divided. Well, I've put that on a longer tape. Actually, it's 2 hours and almost 3 hour long tape. And we've added some speeches by Khalid Muhammad on there, and we've added some footage, some speeches and lectures by Tom Metzger, and we've added some SEALs knife fighting footage on there. So you get the whole thing there for a $20 donation. That's a real nice tape. That video on A Nation Divided covers all the bases. Pretty interesting. So get your donation in for $20 for that one. Also, another one we're going to be putting out is a publication that has been out of the circuit for a long time called Epitaph at Nuremberg, which is a very critical look at Nuremberg, and that's from our side of the fence. And that's that book is going to run you donation about, let's say $15. How's about that? And a new look at the Nuremberg trials. Even though this book was printed quite some time, many years ago, I have not seen it in circulation. And the ever-popular Guide to Urban Survival, we keep adding to it. This month I've added a few pages out of the police or the lie detector and the investigator manual, the book that's out of print now, called The Gentle Art of Interrogation. It's very interesting. So we've added a chapter out of that into the urban survival thing. And those we're selling those for $10. That's a steal, and everybody should have that booklet. Well, it's time for Dr. Kaldenberg, the doctor of mythology, to be entering the studio. He's probably in the dressing room now, putting on his $2,000 Armani suit, and we'll wait here just a second. I'm sure he'll be entering the studio. Well, here he is, direct from the dressing room in his $2,000 Armani suit with that Viking helmet on. That really is attractive, Doctor.
Thank you. I got the suit at Thrifty's. Paid $1.59 for it.
Whoa, it's been a great week, huh?
Yeah, I heard you made a trip up north.
Yeah, I made a little trip up into the boonies up there in the northwest, into that area where we thought we might have an Aryan nation one time.
So what's it looking like now?
It's not looking too good. I'm telling you, there is mud all over that place. Mud, mud, mud. And lots of race mixing. My daughter graduated from the university up there, and her and her boyfriend and his parents, we went out a couple of times there to have some lunch, and the one place we went into, the minute I sit down, there's a nigger and a white gal and an octoroon baby sitting right in front of me. So I said, I can't stand this. I'll sit on the other side of the table. So I moved around, sit on the other side of the table, and be damned if 5 minutes later, the ugliest nigger I ever saw walked in with a beautiful white woman, very Nordic, very Swedish, Danish mm-hmm. type. With another octoroon baby sit right down in front of me. Boy, it's enough to gag a maggot.
Oh, yeah, welcome to democracy.
Yeah, well, I flashed my ring and did everything I could. Of course, the cowboy hat is sort of a dead giveaway to some of these people, yeah. You know. So I think he got the message. But there were, I noticed a lot of other people walking in there that were sort of turning up their nose. Of course, there's always the ones that go up and look at the baby. Oh, what a cute...
Oh, yeah, they go out of their way.
What a cute little monkey.
Say, what a cute little nigglet.
Well, that's what I say when I go to the zoo.
Yeah.
Say, isn't that a cute little monkey?
Have you trained it to do any tricks yet?
Wow, man. But, Dr. Kaldenberg, I must say, I did see a lot of beautiful women along the way.
Oh.
White women. Yeah, there's still plenty of them out there. And if their mind's halfway right... And the university up there, boy, I'll tell you, they're everywhere. I'm telling you. And then the airline station, the airport, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Hot women everywhere.
That's the trouble with the university, though, is every single one of them is like little cults of brainwashes.
Well, I sort of shut in the punch bowl a little bit. I had some Jews sitting right in front of me at the graduation mm-hmm. ceremony, And so, guess what? They had their keynote speaker was an Indian. Poor little Indian boy from the reservation.
Did he do a rain dance?
First guy in the tribe that ever made it, and all this kind of stuff. And he said, you know, the greatest thing about this diversity is a white boy from a small town somewhere can come to the university and meet with an African-American.
Oh, how
and
nice.
And isn't that great? And I said right out loud, I said, well, you could come to the university and meet an axe murderer, but I don't think it would be a very good idea. And the Jew broad's head went around, you know, like in the movie, you know,
yeah.
Spinning around. And I made a couple of other comments to let them know where I stood.
Yeah.
And that was fun. You know, when you get older, you can just say things.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know what I mean? So now that I'm 66,
mm-hmm.
I just say what the hell I want to
cool.
say and screw them, you know. Of course, I've always pretty much
yeah.
done that. But anyhow, it was a great trip, and now I'm back in the saddle again. Oh, I did some sneaking around while I was there.
Oh,
though,
really?
You know, I was tracking old Tubby around a little bit. So I got Tubby pretty well zeroed
yeah.
in now. So, but we'll leave him go for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard you said that there was some gas station that had a sign that says a hate-free zone or some shit there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, just down the street from my daughter's house, there was a little convenience store, gas station. I went in there, and they had a sign on the window, this is a hate-free site. And I said, what the hell is that? He said, oh, that's they come around, and the governor wants that, so we're all putting it in our windows. So I'm going out the door, and I'm like, hell, I don't want to be in no state I can't hate in. I'm getting out of here. And there was an Indian getting out of his car, and he laughed his ass off, too. He thought the whole damn thing was silly.
Well, if it's a hate-free zone, then they can't hate Hitler, and they can't hate the swastika, and they can't hate Nazis, so they ought to have a picture of Hitler if they're not loving.
And they can't hate me, either.
And they can't hate racists.
Well, I'll tell you what's happening up there. It's really funny, because you got all these liberals up there. Mm-hmm. God, that Northwest is crawling with liberals. Yeah. If it's not the liberals, it's the Jesus freaks that make it so you can't buy liquor on Sunday. And all that kind of nonsense. Of course, people just load up on Saturday. I mean, that's silly kind of laws like that. Well, anyhow, there is an Indian reservation, a small one, right not far from my daughter's house, which is all white, pretty much white, has been around there. It says, well, she said, we're going to move. We're going to have to move. I said, why? She said, the Indians are annexing outside the reservation. They're annexing neighborhoods that were primarily white, and they're moving Indians in. Now, how in the hell can they do that?
Democracy.
There's some kind of a law up there that the Indians can annex outside their reservation.
Yeah.
I think it's good because it's pissing the white people off. And also, let them segregate. Put all the Indians in one spot. Would nothing make me happier than put all the Indians in one spot?
So even people like they own their homes and stuff?
They own their homes. They can annex them.
What do they pay them, like whatever they want?
Or? I don't know. I think there's some kind of a deal. They have to do a certain amount. You know, they can't really screw them. Well, they're actually paying more money probably because these Indians, now they got all this money from the white and Asian suckers and Negroes that go out there and gamble all their money away to these damn Indians. So they got all kinds of money. They can afford to give you a premium price for your house to get your ass out of there. Oh, yeah, but I'll tell you what. You know, I like these Indian casinos. I think they're really great because they're not allowing casinos outside the reservation here in California. So only the reservation has the gambling casinos. And you know why that's great? It attracts all the scum out of our neighborhoods, at least for a few hours, and they're all in the damn casino. I'm telling you, if you go to a casino out here on Saturday night, like I've said before, it's so full of the scum of the earth, you're saying, Timothy McVeigh, you hit the wrong spot. I'm telling you, it's... So anyhow, you know what? TB has become so bad in L.A. that it's becoming an epidemic thing from the Mexicans and the South Americans and the Asians. Yeah. And it's very communicable.
Yeah.
It's very bad stuff. Well, guess what? You're going up to this damn Indian reservation. You're going into these gambling casinos. It's all Asians and Mexicans and spics of all kind, and they're right on top of you, breeding on you. Then they're handling those handles on the slot machines and a whole bit. You know, people are going to start dropping like flies.
All right. As long as it's not me.
Well, that's okay. I'm all for that. I'm going to stay out of those joints, man. And I want to remind you, Doctor, this is that resistant type tuberculosis to the antibiotics and so forth.
Well, I told you about how it came about is with the AIDS and stuff, is all these anti-TB drugs. You're supposed to knock the disease down to the certain level where your immune system can kick in and conquer it.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys with these queers with the AIDS and stuff, they'll get the TB because their immune systems are going down, and they'll give them the drugs that will knock the TB down, but your immune system isn't strong enough to kick in and kill it. Mm. And then there the TB becomes stronger. It's like the survival of the fittest. It grows back again, and it learns how to become immune to these TB drugs. So they're making a super TB.
Wow.
A lot of diseases are becoming like that now.
Well, and leprosy, too, is coming back.
Yeah.
I've heard quite a bit about leprosy cases showing up around the country.
Yeah.
And they're shipping them down to that camp in Louisiana, that leprosy camp.
All the benefits of the gay rights movement.
Oh, isn't this great? All the benefits of the black holes of Asia and so forth.
Yeah.
We got them right here now. Wow. And people don't realize it's germ warfare, and we're headed right into it. Plus, like I keep saying, the water thing is getting very, very bad very quickly.
You know, they don't realize that, like, the aquifer is the main thing in the breadbasket of America, the heartland of America. The farmers drill down in their wells and get the water, and the aquifer has been being made there for, you know, hundreds of millions of years. It doesn't replenish. It takes hundreds of millions of years to replenish.
Right.
And when they get rid of that, it's gone, except for maybe another 100 million years from now. So they won't. In the Midwest, it's just going to be a big old desert with no water.
Well, if they had a brain in their head, they'd have been building giant reservoirs all over the country. But you know what's been stopping that is the snail darter and things like that. Some of the, we're all for the ecology, but some people go nuts.
Oh, yeah.
However, on the other hand, maybe we need a cataclysmic catastrophe. Maybe that's working in our favor. Now, also, I was talking about that tuberculosis and stuff. What's so bad about it is Mexicans and these scum from South America, the non-white types, and all the Asians, they're great spitters.
They spit
all over the ground. They spit everywhere they go. And in China, that's proven to have spread SARS very badly. In China, where it hasn't spread quite as much here, but in areas like L.A. and these places where people, the scum really gather, they're spitting all over the place. So, man, it's going to just get into the schools and everything.
Yeah.
So these little wetback kids are dragging this stuff into the schools.
You know, L.A. is so much like Blade Runner now that you can go into whole neighborhoods and districts where all the signs are basically in Korean or Filipino or whatever language, and not even in English, and you look around, you can't even read anything.
Well, I think according to the movie, though, I can get me a ticket to go to the Outland. I think maybe. Where in the hell is the Outland?
I think it's here.
Well,
it's in your bunker.
I guess it's in the bunker here, yeah.
You know, in the novel, A Brave New World, people who wouldn't conform to society, they call them the heathens, and they ship them all out to Iceland and other colonies.
Wow.
And that way they could just, kind of like the people who dropped out of the New World Order.
Well, we're going to have to get rid of all those Vietnamese they shipped to Iceland if they're going to send us there, because they've been jamming Iceland
Vietnamese. The Vietnamese have the highest, in Iceland, they got the highest birth rate.
Oh,
like
boy.
Bjork, you know that. She's the most famous person from Iceland, and she's some kind of like an Eskimo.
My first day back on the job, and I'm already getting depressed. Dr. Kaldenberg, is it time to go to our loyal listeners?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah, and I want to announce that we're trying to set it up to where we can put this update on the telephone, but have it go through the computer and be up on the web and all that kind of stuff. I don't quite understand it, but we're working on it, and that way there won't be any machine anymore to bother us. What do you think?
Yeah, probably still keep the machine, though, for people who don't have the Internet.
No. They can call with a telephone to the Internet and get the message. Yeah, that's the whole idea.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, I don't know yet.
Neither do I. We're
working on it. We're always working on something down here in the bunker. So here we go. Let's listen to some of our callers. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Tom and Dr. Kallenberg, I was wondering what your opinion on these stupid white bitches. Every relationship I get into, these stupid white bitches, they find out that you're any kind of a racist. They want to drop you. I just hooked up with a girl about a month ago. She's 33, beautiful girl. She's got two kids. I kind of let her know, filled her out kind of what I was, and she was cool with it. And then about a month later, she's like, I don't think you should be around my kids with your racial hatred. These stupid white bitches. How do you get across? I know Tom, you said you gotta just feed them a little bit. I feed them a little bit, and then they start choking on me. It's very frustrating, extremely frustrating. If you have any ideas, pass them along.
Well, I know it's a very difficult problem, because when I sit here in the cool temperature of my bunker and intellectualize about this stuff, it seems very easy. But when I was out looking around and traveling, and that's why you got to get out in the public and look around, I can see that it's a lot more difficult than what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you got beautiful, beautiful white women, Nordic types, that are actually marrying the ugliest damn monkey that you could think of, and going into a public place with their little half-coon kid, their mind is so totally gone that there's no retrieving them.
Yeah.
Now, if you figure that half the women, or more than half the white women, are even half that bad, they're maybe not going to be married, but they jump all over if you say anything racist, you got a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, it's a tough deal, but I guess you have to just assert your manhood and say, well, go to hell, bitch, and go on down the road, and just keep... You know, like I used to have a friend who used to go into a bar, and He'd go up the first woman he'd see. Want to have sex? She'd slap his face. Go up to the next one. You want to have sex? She'd slap his face. After about six of them, they all slap his face. But the seventh one says, yeah. Well, so why don't you just go up in a bar and say, hey, I'm white and I'm proud.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? If they slap your face, go to the next one and just keep going. Well, you're bound to reach one sooner or later.
Well, not to make you sound all depressed, but women are biologically programmed to support who's ever in power.
Ooh.
And you know, if you watch that thing Walking with Cavemen and stuff, women want to look for the alpha male. And white racism in this society is seen as a weakness. We have no power. Niggers are built up as Superman. So the women are biologically going to be drawn to the Superman, the alpha male.
Okay. Now, Dr. Kaldenberg, in your great intellectual palace in the sky, come on, tell me, hows do we get the power?
You get the power, and you get a club, and you beat the shit out of them, and you rape them. And
violence. Violence. Oh, I see bumper stickers all over the Northwest. Violence is no answer.
Well, women can't comprehend deep philosophy. They're not programmed that. They're programmed to look over, even with feminism. Feminism is a power philosophy. It's a dominant philosophy. So women surrender to feminism because they're biologically programmed to surrender to power. And that's why women now are feminists. It's not because they want to be liberated. It's because they want to surrender to the power.
Well, that may mean in that restaurant I was in, if I'd have walked up and grabbed that nappy, burr-headed nigger by the head and smacked his head into the stone floor a few times, then I could have walked out with that chick.
Yeah. Well women are attracted to the bad guy.
Oh.
The bad guy is the strong guy.
Well,
and right now on the rap TV, MTV, the niggers are always the strong guy. And you got pussy little white guys like Eminem that all he wants to do is be a nigger because the niggers are powerful. And he'll do anything to be black.
Well,
and white women see that and say, well, fuck this white guy. I want to go to the true power. And the true power is the alpha male. And the alpha male in this society is the nigger.
You convinced me. I'm going to buy me a Harley, rip my T-shirt, and grow a beard, and go get those babes, huh?
No.
But I don't think my girlfriend will let me.
Yeah.
How about that? But she's racist as I am, so I don't need to go looking. Whoa!
Great show, guys. 88.
Well, that was short and sweet.
Tom, I want to know how a guy as smart as Plastic Bear, who wrote a phenomenal book, you have to admit, did such stupid things as hit on other members' wives and also, to take money from people. I just can't rectify the two sides of that.
Well. Well, I'll tell you why. Number one, the word I got was that a lot of these two books that Plastic Man wrote were ghost-written by some people close to him, and that supposedly comes from inside the camp. So I don't know whether that's true or not, but it makes sense. Anyhow, Mr. Plastic Man has always had a psychological problem. I recognized it way back in the 70s, and that's why I got away from him, because he is not an immoral man, he is an amoral man. And you cannot understand, a person who is a moral or immoral person cannot begin to understand an amoral person. An amoral person can screw you out of your eye teeth and then look you in the face and say, I can't understand why you're upset with me.
Well, Deuce's got a word. Psychology is...
It's Plastic Man.
Okay, Plastic Man's got a word, psychology, because whenever you hate him, he will love you, but if you love him, he'll hate you.
Well, there was another guy like that in the right wing, and that's Willis Carto.
Yeah.
He used to run off all the loyal people. And he embraced the ones who turned out to stab him in the back.
With Duke, the people who were the most loyal to him, they would be the first one that he'd hit up on their wives.
Number one.
You know, if you hated him, you'd have respect for him.
Well, you got to understand that there are people who have a very early on psychological damage.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look back in the history of Plastic Man, he had some severe problems as a child.
Yeah.
And he went right on up with it. And I'm not going to go into all of it, but if you want to research it, you can find out that if you did a real study on him, you would find out that he is seriously damaged. And that is the answer to why he does things that are destructive. He's been doing counter and destructive things to himself long before I met him in 1975, and long after I got away from him in 1977, I believe it was. So that's just the way it is. But if study the term immoral, and then study the term amoral, and you'll find the answer.
Keep up the good work.
Local Review. He was interviewed by the National Alliance a couple of times. Just wondering what your views on the IHR might be. Thank you.
Well, that was part of a question there, and it was about the leader of the IHR, and his name escapes me right at the moment. But the IHR, well, the Institute for Hysterical Review, as I lovingly call it, but they've done some good work, but I think there was too much money put into that pot, and there's too many people who are afraid to come out and say they're racist, and there's too many people that aren't even racist involved with IHR. Here again, I've been on friendly terms with the IHR for some time. We certainly don't fight, but I still say it's better off to just say, yeah, they wiped out 6 million, so what, and go on, rather than spend the rest of our lives trying to argue whether the children of Israel went through the Red Sea, the Red Sea?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that the great Jehovah opened up the sea and they went on through. Because still, if people still believe that shit, how can you expect them not to believe this? And especially when we've had all these Hollywood movies about the Holocaust. So if you write 10 pages about the Holocaust and distribute them to a very small group, they come back with a $100 million epic movie widescreen.
And show it to the world.
And show it to the world. So sometimes I think it would have been better off not even to start talking about it, because I think most people would like to forget it. I think, and it's funny because the niggers don't even know anything about it. If you ask them about what it is, they don't even know, most of them.
Yeah.
So I think maybe we shot ourselves in the foot, not we, but the well-meaning people, of researching all this.
Well,
of course, it's for supposed truth, but like Pilate said, what is truth?
Mm-hmm.
And then why don't we just say, yeah, they wasted a hell of a bunch of Jews, but 55 million people died in World War II anyhow.
Well, you know, a lot of the Jews, when they make Hollywood, I know Spielberg did that with Schindler's List, you know, people will say, oh, another Holocaust movie, whatever the fuck they need those. And they will justify it with Spielberg did. He says, because of the Holocaust deniers, we have to make this movie to get the truth out, to combat them. And that justifies their 10th million Holocaust movie.
Well, like that lawsuit against, who was that writer, the British writer? David Irving, by that broad, by the name of Lipschitz.
Mm-hmm.
That's, boy, what a name, Lipschitz. Well, she wrote this big, long book about it, and this is why we have to challenge them and all that. It's almost like, you know, I would almost, if I was a Jew, I'd almost pay people to do this. Because then I could come back and, like you say, have the excuse. I believe these people are all well-meaning, and I believe that they're seeking the truth. But, you know, the truth never set one person free of anything.
It didn't.
No. It took, if you know the truth, then you got to kick somebody's ass to get free. And these people are willing to know the truth, but they're not willing to kick ass to make it come true, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That's our problem. It don't make any difference how educated you are on the subject if you're not able to create the politics of the deed.
Well,
you know, I love that anarchist term, the politics of the deed.
Mm-hmm.
How beautiful a picture an act is.
You can
talk and talk and talk.
Propaganda of the deed.
No.
Propaganda of the deed.
What did I say?
You said politics of the deed.
Well, it's the same thing. Whatever.
Well
propaganda.
Okay. I'll let you slide.
Dr. Goldenberg, you're sitting there in your $2,000 Armani suit with your Viking helmet on, and here I am, your faithful servant in a pair of old shorts and a little old red shirt. And no money in my pocket, so you don't pick on me.
Oh, this is a true story. I couldn't believe it. At work, there's a Muslim guy, and his name is Shahid. Do you know how they spell Shahid?
Shit.
S H S-H-I-T-H-E-A-D. Shithead. His last name is Shithead. Shahid.
Oh, my God. You can't even get charged with a hate crime.
Oh, no.
Calling him Shithead.
You know, whenever he puts in a report or anything, the supervisors, they just look at the name for a while just to figure out how to pronounce it, you know.
Yeah, without insulting. Yeah,
without being a hate criminal.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what happened up here in the high desert, Dr. Kaldenberg?
Which high desert?
Well, up there,
Hesperia?
I guess Hesperia, Victorville, up in that way. And mm-hmm. to those of you who are in a foreign country, that's on the way to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it seems that these nasty old neo-Nazis put out a few thousand war newspapers around
Whoa.
There. And there was a big, big, big problem. And the head of the Jewish Federation he said, it's a shame. Whether it's anti-black, anti-Jewish, or anti-Catholic, I'm always disgusted by these things. So somebody did a good job.
Yeah.
Whenever we can discuss, Earl Schechter, his name is, the executive director of the Jewish Federation of Broome County. Where in the hell is Broome County? That's not around here.
We're going to sweep out racism.
Well, I'm going to tell you. They got a little agitated about that. Well, every once in a while, some of the friends of war want to go out there and get a little exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So they exercise their free speech privilege. Mm-hmm. Not right, their privilege. So you throw those things and run, man.
Well, that's good they put them on the porch, because if they put them in the mailbox, that's like a federal crime.
Yeah, don't put them in the mailbox, boys.
Anywhere near it,
yeah,
post office will come
don't
after
just
you.
Put one on a nigger's doorstep, because that probably could be called a hate crime.
Yeah.
But if you do the whole neighborhood, if you do not discriminate, and you put hate literature on everybody's front porch, then you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love everybody. Give them
hey,
all
hey, you know, Carl Hand had a rally back there in, where was that? In Buffalo.
Buffalo,
you know,
yeah.
Carl comes from Buffalo. Well, he's still a right winger, but I like old
he's
Carl.
He's a likable guy.
Yeah, he's a likable guy. He's out there with a few people demonstrating to dump Israel. And remember the USS Liberty. He did that last week, I guess. Uh-huh. So that's what he did. And then it says here someplace where he said he's going to run for office or something. He's going to be a write-in vote.
That's good.
Write-in. Where does it say
right
that?
There.
Oh, for U.S. Senate.
In 2004.
Yeah, in 2004. So anyhow, you know, I got to tell you something, though. A write-in candidacy is worthless, but... you need to get, if you're going to run on a party. Don't make any difference whether it's the Joe Palooka party or what. It don't make any difference how rotten the party is either, but just go and run on their ticket. And then they'll get all pissed off like I did when I ran on the red Democrat ticket.
Oh, what's going on in California, talking about politics, is the governor of California, I guess they have a big petition about recalling him, because they can do that in California. And they've supposedly got 700,000 signatures. And they only need 900,000, and all kinds of people, even Arnold Schwarzenegger, thinking about running for the governor and stuff. And when they do that, there's no primaries. The elections are just wide open, so anybody who wants to run can just sign up and run.
Well, hell, I'll run for a governor.
Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting.
Well, I don't know. I know Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, you know, that'd be. Do you think that'd be good to have him as a governor? Yeah. Well, he got a big award from the Anti-Defamation.
Well,
League.
The thing is, if he becomes a government, maybe all the stuff about his dad being in the SS and him being friends with David Duke, and he used to run out when he was in Gold's Gym down there, and in Huntington Beach, he used to run across the street from the Nazis to get new literature and stuff. And he said he wasn't anti-Jew. Well, he told these guys he wasn't anti-Jew. He just wanted the anti-nigger stuff.
Well, he knows all this. They know all this stuff. But you wait and see. If he would run on a Republican ticket, that stuff would come out immediately.
Yeah.
That would come out immediately. But as long as he's making these Jews in Hollywood and these other boys lots of money, they're not going to put it out, because the Hollywood newspapers and all that have had this information for years. They have no excuse. But sometimes a star becomes such a moneymaker for these people that they're not going to smear him until he steps out of line or until he runs as a Republican in the state of California. It's sort of a joke anymore because they got the built-in non-white vote. They got all the Mexicans vote. Mostly voting Democrat. They got all the niggers voting Democrat, and they got all the white liberals voting Democrat, and all the Jews voting Democrat, or most of them. And so what's left?
Mm-hmm.
Not me, because I'm not a Republican.
Yeah.
Well.
Speaking of getting out of line, I guess there's going to be a big thing about questioning Mel Gibson, if he's an anti-Semite or not, because I guess his dad really hates Jews, and he said that the Holocaust was just a Jewish lie, and his dad's a traditional Catholic, just like Mel Gibson is, and he's going to make this Christ movie now. So I was watching The Tough Crowd, and they were talking about, you know, how anti-Semitic Mel Gibson is stuff. So he may be getting out of the line of the movie because he's playing Christ.
He's going to have to go back to Australia and chase kangaroos and wallabies here pretty soon. Yeah, that's what's going to happen, because if they decide to pull a rug out from under him, he's screwed.
Oh, yeah.
And the Catholics won't even support him. No. You wait and see.
Oh, no.
Hell, the Catholics are such liberal, most of them, they don't talk about the Jews anymore. Back in the old days, there were priests all over the place, and Father Seance in Mexico wrote a great book against the Jews. I have it here someplace in my library. It's in Spanish, though.
Mm-hmm.
And these Catholic priests used to rail against the Jews, but no more. They've gotten rid of all those boys. Yeah, man. You know, Dr. Kahlenberg, I met that Father Seance. I guess that's the way you pronounce his name, from Mexico. At Robert DePew had a big meeting back in 71 in Norborn, Missouri. He brought all the right-wing leaders in and from all these different groups.
Was that the Minuteman, or was that the Pond?
Well, he was the Minuteman. Okay, yeah, he was the leader of the Minutemen. This was after he'd served about 8 or 9 years in prison. And he got back out, and he called them all together. So we had the Klan, we had the Minutemen, we had just everybody that was anybody. Mm-hmm. And Robert Shelton was there, and there must have been 200 or 300 people there. Mm-hmm. Most of them, a lot of them, were leaders of groups from around the country, and even the boys from Mexico came up, the anti-Jew section.
Was it Sedati?
And then they came up to Jim Warner's gathering for the New Christian Crusade Church. I met them in Los Angeles when they came up for that, too. And there's no more Jew-hating guys than these Mexicans.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, they had scars all over themselves for fighting in the streets against the Reds and stuff down in Mexico. Too bad they're not white, but they sure as hell got the picture of the Jew right. And I'm going to have to say that if we was fighting the Jews really hard, they'd be probably welcome in your foxhole, at least temporarily.
That is a problem, though. It seems like sometimes the guys who wants to fight the most for the white race, a lot of times it's the guys that aren't the whitest, you know?
Well, I don't know whether I'll be fighting for the white race, because their attitude is more, we're fighting against the Jews.
But I noticed that in the movie, though, you get these people that aren't quite white, that they're just militant white racists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they. In fact, a lot of them even are allowed in some of the groups.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, they rail and rail against non-whites and the Jews. Sometimes I'm a little embarrassed for them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dr. Kahlenberg, years ago, there was, under Carter, there was a Jew, the Levy was Attorney General, and he developed the Levy Guidelines, which he was a Jew, but these were good guidelines, and these were to shut up all this spying on legitimate people of this country.
Yeah.
But what they did to get around it was, not the Levy, but the law enforcement and the FBI did, they created an outfit called LEIU way back then. Mm-hmm. Now, Law Enforcement Investigative Units. And what these were was a private club of police officials around the country that maintained private computer storage banks, and the membership was limited to only 2 or 3 people, the top people in a police department.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest of the cops didn't know anything about what's going on. And then these people gathered illegally, unconstitutionally, information and gave it to the FBI. Well, they're back in business again. And I remember quoting many times that when the LEIU official was brought before a congressional committee, and they asked him about terrorism, and they said, well, how do you determine a terrorist? He said, well, a terrorist is who we say is a terrorist.
Yeah.
So that's exactly the way they feel. Well, now, there's a big article. This was in a paper picked up in Seattle, actually, in a Seattle Weekly. And it was an article by Geoff Parrish. And it says what the fuss was all about. Well, anyhow, it goes into this fact that this LEIU now is going to team up again and and they're going to be helping spy on everybody, and these will be the secret club within every police, yeah. every police department in every major city. And this one guy, one of the heads of it, he's quoted as saying, "We have found a standard that is not only operationally effective, but legally acceptable." And of course, legal is whatever the Iron Heel decides is legal. So not only do you have the ATF, you got the FBI, you got the CIA, you got everything. Now you got LEIU again doing up to their old tricks. So anybody, your neighbor, these people can. Now they've got schools to train informants and snitches for the government, where they train private people the whole bit. You can make money out of that. So your next door neighbor could be just as dangerous as Ashcroft.
Oh yeah.
So you can't trust anybody totally. Now, a lot of people don't like to hear that, but if you're going to be an activist and stay alive and try to stay out of prison, you can't trust anybody completely.
Yeah.
And anything weird that happens, anything suspicious, man, note it and think about it. Be careful.
Yeah. Well, you know, another thing is like right after Watergate, they started to use the ADL and Simon Wiesenthal and the Southern Poverty Law Center as a spy network, because they weren't they didn't have to reform to this levy act and stuff, so they could spy. And then they could
break the law.
And then they could get, well, they're not really breaking the law.
They have broken the law.
Yeah, they do break
the law.
They've
been sued and, screwed.
Yeah, that San Francisco thing.
Well, Denver, they just.
But they go around the law and stuff, and they give it to the FBI, and the FBI's big way out is saying that, we're not responsible for private citizens who give us information.
Well, but they're lying through their teeth because they invite ADL and other
types into their
FBI meetings in Quantico and all these places, and they lecture them. They lecture the agents. This is what we want.
Well, if you go to the Justice Department's website, I mean, the ideology there is the exact same ideology as the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, there's absolutely not one single idea that's different. It's just like it's written by the same people who write Morse's D's website.
Yeah, so they're all your enemy, boys and girls. And the what is the secret to that? I have nothing to say. Five words. And boy, I'll tell you, look at what I said about Martha Stewart. She's not being tried because they have the evidence on her inside trading. They're trying her for lying to the FBI or withholding information or whatever. But all she had to have done was said, "I have nothing to say," and I don't think she'd have been indicted.
No.
And now, so here's a woman that's got maybe $1 billion that's too stupid to say, "I have nothing to say."
Oh, she's too arrogant because she thinks that she can, you know, she thinks she's this real intellectual person and can talk her way around the FBI, and she's basically just talked her way in a mess. She would, like you say, she wouldn't have gone to jail if she didn't start talking to him.
Well, you show me a person that is too arrogant, and I will show you a stupid person.
No, somebody's going to jail.
Yeah, because we've seen a lot of those in the struggle, too.
Yeah.
That, you know, they're going to talk, well, they're going to tell the cops how innocent they are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't give a shit how innocent you are. Oh, man.
Oh, you know, I was reading the paper that the appellate court, the FBI, you know, because they were talking about their powers and stuff, and the Justice Department made a statement. He said that there's an enemies list the Justice Department's collecting now, and the names in the list are as plentiful and as real as the names in the Cold War. So this war on terrorism is the new Cold War.
Yeah, you can imagine. Well,
they're comparing it to the Cold War.
They needed a Cold
War. Oh, yeah.
Once you get one thing out of the road, you got to create a new enemy immediately.
I mean, 9/11 was a godsend to the pigs. I mean, you know, they pray to the little double god that happened, because now they can, everything they do, they justify with 9/11.
They've got to have
war on terrorism, baby.
Yeah, they've got to have this stuff.
And the thing, they go up to judges, and if a judge, you know, questions whether it's constitution, that they'll say, "Well, do you really want another, you know, 9/11?" They put it on the judge, and what judge will say, "Well, yeah, I want another 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, so he'll back down and let the pigs walk all over the Constitution.
I'm willing to risk it.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Uh-huh. Well, you friends of racism out there, you know, we've got a great video offer, and some of you have really enjoyed it, and that is the Rockwell offer, and that's for $25 donation. We're going to give you that real long biography on videotape of George Lincoln Rockwell. This is really, and some very old footage on there that was shot with 8mm and transferred to tape. And then, not only that's worth $25 donation right there, but we're going to throw in the California Reich, which was made in the late 70s, as I recall. And Alan Vincent and all those guys are in it, and that's very well done. And the boys up at Tracy, and I think you'll even see a present-day actor was still going, and that Rick Cooper in that videotape, California Reich. And then, not to be outdone, here's another one we're throwing in, and that is the riots in Marquette Park in Chicago back in the early 70s. And this is these are all great tapes, giving them to you for a donation of $25 to war. What do you think of that?
Pretty gruesome.
Oh, man, what a deal. And then the ever-popular Hitler Fest.
Whoa.
Oh, boy, I think we almost lose money on that one. We got Good Morning, Mr. Hitler, which is the film that was hidden under the floorboards in a house for decades and decades, and finally they brought up and redone and digitalized, and they're absolutely gorgeous, as Good Morning, Mr. Hitler. And then there's the Hitler speeches with subtitles. We've got that. And then Hitler's secret weapons. And then we've got, what else? There's about four videotapes there that are really good. And everybody that's ordered them liked them. And that takes a while to put together. Those are $25 donation, too. Just say the Hitler Fest. Now, of course, we got the ever-popular Might is Right by Ragnar Redbeard, and Don't Leave Home Without It, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Everybody that's relatively new to the struggle needs to read Might is Right, because that'll really pick you up off your chair, spin you around, slap you around, and sit you down, and knock a lot of sense into you.
You know, the good thing about that book, if you read that book, you also read the Satanic Bible, because the Satanic Bible basically just plagiarizes the hell out of that book.
Well, it plagiarizes it totally.
I mean, they take whole passages out of there.
Yeah, right.
They don't even have any quotes or anything.
That's true. Now, here's a sleeper we haven't had a lot of orders on, but I think it's a good book. It's Hate Crimes Pro and Con, and it's the big argument about hate crimes. And I was commissioned to write one chapter in that book myself. So I'm up there in lights as a... not a doctor like you, but a sort of a, well, I don't know, sort of a...
street intellectual.
Intellectual? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, anyhow, that's a good book, $20, and it gives you a lot of ways to argue against hate crimes, you know? So, anyhow, and then all you guys out there, what else? We got those, the Skinhead Code plus the Skinhead Photo Album. Yeah, a must for skinhead recruits and veterans alike. $15 donation, and now back to our regularly scheduled program. Okay, Dr. Kaldenberg, what you got on your list?
Gregory Peck is dead.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I know. I remember during the Portland trial that he was one of the Southern Poverty Law Centers had a fundraiser, and there's a quote on him that he was saying that Morris Deeds was the greatest hero of the century, and the victory in the trial was the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Oh, yeah.
So
Gregory.
He was a big Southern Poverty Law Center supporter. So.
Gregory Pecker. He lived down here not too far from me on the coast. And
La Jolla.
And every movie he ever made was anti-white.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like the Kill the Mockingbird, that was a big race mixing.
Oh,
you know, that was,
yeah.
That was like the first, that was a race mixing movie when I was in school that they had to show all the time. I mean, continuously.
Yeah. Gregory had to protect the poor Negro down south someplace.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't even... Well, there was so many of them that he made.
There was that
like
one that I think was the first one that was supposed to be anti-Jewish, where I guess he played a Jew fighting anti-Semitism or something.
Yeah, and it's interesting how Gregory Peck... is he a Jew or isn't he a Jew?
Yeah, acts like one.
But you see, genetically, he could be an Aryan, you know, but... But you notice whenever they make movies, they have Aryan-looking Jews or Aryans play Jews.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have, in that movie where he tries to rent a room in a hotel and they're letting him know at a country club or whatever that he couldn't stay there. Now, they don't have a hook-nosed, greasy Jew play the part.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's always a guy who either is a Jew who is biologically more Aryan or an actual Aryan.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's always brilliant and everybody else is stupid and bigoted and ignorant, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So he be gone and David Brinkley be gone.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's another good boy.
Oh, yeah, another boy that played the corporate game all the time, all of his life. Yeah. Oh.
He was one of the ones who brought in the civil rights movement with his liberal slant on the news.
Yeah, he was a spinoff of that World War II jerk. What was his name? Broadcasted out of London.
Oh, God, just, yeah.
Edward R. Murrow. Another one, yeah. Well, at least the Southern Tobacco Boys got him.
Yeah, that's good. Revenge of the South. And Walter Cronkite was another one. I'm waiting until he kicks the bucket.
Yeah, well, I've seen he's even doing some children's audio.
Yeah.
Channels. He's on TV the other day. His audio,
yeah.
Not his picture, but his audio.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, everybody's got to die sooner or later, but we can be happy as hell when our enemies die.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, I celebrate. What were you watching, Colin Quinn?
I love that show, The Tough Crowd.
Oh boy.
When you were up in Seattle, there was a show where they had Jewish and Arab comedians arguing about the Middle East.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about funny. I mean, they were just really giving them some really good stuff. Putting them down and stuff.
Did you tape it?
No, I didn't. I did not.
See, I always tell Dr. Kaldenberg, hey, tape the thing and then I can see it. Oh, no. Or he calls me, I'm supposed to tape
it. Yeah, you tape
it. I got too much to do here, man. You look at all this stuff in front of me here.
Jon Stewart and The Tough Crowd on Comedy Central are the two best news programs to watch. If you want to know what's going on in the world, you just watch those.
Well, I think the funniest thing on TV is the news.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, you know, you get more... Actually, you get better information from that than you do the 6 o'clock news, because at least you know where their BS is coming from.
Yeah, that Stewart show, yeah. I try to tune into that once in a while. It's funny, yeah. Hey, Dr. Kaldenberg, what's going on Iraq?
Oh, it's kind of interesting now. It's about every day an American's getting assassinated. You know, they won the war, but they're going to lose the peace. And I heard on the radio that they're basically like the American Revolution, like the Minutemen, that the American soldiers will come into a town and stuff like that, and the town people will signal the guerrillas with lights to get the hell out. You know, they'll flick their lights on, or they'll light a candle or do something, and they'll take off so the Americans can't catch them. And
isn't this what we predicted?
Oh, yeah.
We predicted it'd be a war of attrition, you know, so they take the capital. Well, yeah, they technically control. Look at Afghanistan. Nobody's safe outside of Kabul.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so here we go again, get bogged down just like the Russians did.
Yeah. Well, they're talking, the Bush administration's talking about they're sending inspectors into Iran to check out their nuclear facilities because they're thinking they're building weapons of the mass destruction. Got nuclear weapons in Iran.
Now, if the CIA isn't behind these student demonstrations, I'll kiss your ass.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, big student demonstrations. You know, they hadn't had hardly any of that. You know, all of a sudden, big demonstrations. So somebody's in there agitating, you know. Stuart Crane used to put out a tape for the Birch Society called Proofs of a Conspiracy. And he said he talked to this Arab guy that ran a grocery store in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
He said, how do those communists work over there? He said, well, this is the way they work. They get in front of a mob, they get them all riled up, and then pretty soon they're all agitated and head down for the police station or wherever to riot, okay? And then when they get about a half a block away, these leaders, they step into a door jam and or into an alley, and there goes the mob down to confront the power. So that's the way they do it, those agitators. You know?
Most of the left in the 60s is you'd have one red sitting here and one red sitting up there. One red, you know, they'd get up and they'd say something. Another guy would get up and they'd basically control the meeting of other people. Like they call it bird dogging and stuff, where you go into if you're, you know, Communist Party membership, you go into the SDS and you take about 10 guys and you spread them around and you basically just take control of the meeting.
Wow.
You know, they used to, well, that's what they did. That's what the, Progressive Labor Party slandered Tom Hayden and stuff, and they basically destroyed his leadership and took over.
Well, they tried to kick our ass, but we kicked their ass in Oxnard.
Turned out to be through the Freedom of Information Act, they found a lot of those Progressive Labor Party guys were FBI agents and stuff.
Well, there probably was some FBI agents got their ass kicked in Oxnard because, you know, we met with the cops a week before we had our rally up there, and we said, we said, well, how many cops are you expecting to have there? And they said, 9 cops, or just a few, a skeleton force. And the chief of police went out of town for the weekend to Mexico.
Yeah, don't blame him.
We just laughed at him. We said, okay, you handle your problem, we'll handle ours. Well, they put 9 cops in the hospital. Those Reds, they didn't give a shit about cops.
Yeah.
I saw one get his helmet split wide open right in front of me.
Yeah.
We rescued one, saved his life. I don't know whether we should have done that or not.
Yeah.
But anyhow, they went nuts, but they didn't beat us. we beat the Progressive Labor Party just like we beat Irv Rubin and his boys. And they had us outnumbered in Oxnard. God, they must have had an outnumbered 50 to 1.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there was a mob there.
But that just shows you the secret. When you hold the high ground, when we held the community mm-hmm. center and we immediately barricaded the doors and windows and got the fire hoses out and all that shit, you can stand off 1,000
men.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
And every time they tried, one guy got over the barricade and we kicked his ass so bad. Threw him out like a rag doll, man.
Yeah.
So anyhow, the Progressive Labor Party went back limping. They brought cops in from all over Southern California. Yeah, they were flying cops in from L.A. and everything. These Reds, then they couldn't get in the community center, so they started running through all the neighborhoods. You know, I've told this story before, but they run in the front of a guy's house. He's sitting there watching TV and run right out his back door. The guy didn't know what the hell is going on here. They got out in the intersections, the cars couldn't go. Oh, man, that was a hell of a riot.
Oh, I saw in the paper that the CIA is whining that they can't, they don't have enough powers to have enough spies to secure the nation. So they were whining in the paper today about they want more police powers.
Oh,
I mean, that's the oldest
trick
in the book, you know, is that, you know, they will allow things. You know, I don't think they really create things. Like 9/11, I don't think they were the creator, but they knew about it enough, and then they allowed it. Just like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
You know, Roosevelt wanted the United States in the war. He couldn't get in the war because the First American Committee, and their spies knew that the Japanese were going to attack, and they just turned off the radar and sit back and watch the Japanese attack, so that way the Americans get all pissed off and they want to go in World War II. Same way with 9/11, is they knew that this was, even Newsweek and Time said that they knew about it.
Yeah.
They had all kinds of reports. They said the internet was just hopping with buzz and stuff about it with the logs and stuff. And basically, they just sit and let 3,000 people die. And now, oh my God, we can't have another 9/11. We need more power.
We'll go back to World War One, or before World War One, when we told the Germans, put big ads in the paper in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go on that. What was that ship that got sunk? The SS. I can't remember the name, but anyhow. Don't go on that mm-hmm. ship because it's got arms aboard, and we mm-hmm. got to stop it. And what the hell did they do? The people climbed on board, and mm-hmm. Then they got torpedoed, and then they used that excuse to enter the war.
Yeah.
Why, the dumbasses deserve to drown. Well, anyhow, I can't remember the name of the ship, but most of you people out there, older people, know what I'm talking about.
Started with an L, or?
No, I don't remember anymore. It'll come to my mind later on. You know, another thing that's really caught my attention, Dr. Kallenberg, and that is the connection between the way Hitler was acting at the end, or towards sort of the end, and the doctor that was pumping him full of methamphetamines mm-hmm. and all kinds of shit, you know? And it really interested me because in following the degree of medicine he was getting and following the months as the war went on, and he became more reckless and things like that. Well, then I discovered another very interesting thing just the other day, and that was that, guess who? John F. Kennedy was getting fed a dose of these amphetamines, mm-hmm. Like Hitler was, right up around that time at Bay of Pigs. Remember, mm-hmm. he got pretty bold and ballsy right at that point. You know, that could have been a nuclear war, right? Yeah. So I think that all these presidents are being told that, you know, they all got problems because they're mostly older guys or they're young guys with problems. And they're told by these doctors, and probably the doctors are run by the CIA, oh, you're going to need some of our special poo-poo juice, man. Yeah. And they shoot this shit into them, and they make them do funny things.
Well, with Bush, you know, you don't have to really feed him dope. He's already done it.
Yeah, he's a dope already, but they just have to handle it themselves. Yeah. He just signed a paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, doctor, this is a little bit off the wall, but I watched a great documentary the other night on public TV. It was the history of the lighthouses in Alaska.
Oh.
Now, there's, 10, 15 of these lighthouses. Went to every one and told the whole history of it. And, boy, what a thing that was of these white men who went out there and they had to stay there a year or so in total isolation and run these lighthouses. And they had to work their ass off because those big prisms on those lights had to be totally polished every 2 days. And they were big things. And they had to do all this stuff. And then they built, first they were sort of wood. It was established about the end of the gold rush, putting these lighthouses up, because all these ships were in the inland ocean there next to the coast, I forget what they call it, the sounds there, and they were sinking with all these miners and stuff, so they started putting up. Anyhow, there was one of those got hit with a tsunami that was going 500 miles an hour. Yeah. I had to play it back. 500 miles an hour, and they said the thing was about 100 feet tall. A tsunami wave.
Yeah.
It hit that island, and they didn't have a chance. It took everything, everybody, and just washed it right off that rock, man.
Well, remember in the early 60s, they had a tsunami in Alaska. I knew a guy, I went to school with a guy who lived there when it happened, and it over the Aleutian Islands and stuff, just washed over and took a lot of... You remember the pictures of all the boats turned upside down and stuff, and a lot of the crew just swept away?
But, you know, those guys really deserve a pat on the back, those guys that used to man those lighthouses.
Oh, yeah.
Not only from the mental, you sort of think like The Shining, you know, the guys running over.
Yeah, right.
You wonder how many guys went stir-crazy, you know. Yeah. Well, at first, they had some of the guys, though, with the Coast Guard during the war that were on these things. And they'd say, if you'll go for 1 year, we'll give you 3 months leave.
Oh, yeah.
So they'd get them that way, you know. But that was a very interesting story, and I could not hardly accept the fact that it's miles an hour?
Oh, yeah.
Water?
Yeah.
That was unbelievable, man, but that's what they said. That's, well, anyhow, it's interesting. If you get a chance to pick that up, you'll find it very interesting. Most good Aryans would.
Yeah.
I don't think the niggers would give a damn.
They
don't even give a shit if they crash their boat.
Tsunamis are created by earthquakes, so the earth must have shook, and it just must have been like a rolling effect.
Right.
Yeah, and
right.
That's why it picked up so much speed. Earthquakes, when they go, I guess they go pretty fast.
Yeah. Now, there was some dummies up there while I was up in the Northwest. They got on a boat.
They rented a boat.
They went out, and there was, I don't think, 12 or 14 of them. Now, they're out there, and they got hit with a 15-foot wave, and the thing tipped over, and nine of them drowned.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
Well, they didn't have any life jackets on.
Yeah.
I mean, and the only ones that lived had life jackets. They weren't that far from shore.
Well, they were saying on the news that the captain was pointing out the life jackets for them and stuff, and I guess they were just, you know, like guys are, they were drinking and slapping.
Goofy white people,
yeah.
I'll bet you.
Yeah,
I don't even think there was a nigger on that boat,
because
they don't like the water.
No.
Yeah.
They said that the four of them that got killed were all buddies going out there to drinking.
Yeah, they were drinking and drunk again and didn't, didn't care or whatever. That's the way. Oh, it can't happen to me. I'm young.
Yeah.
Well, they've had a whole bunch of drownings along the coast this year. Whoa, yeah. We're going to close out the show here with a little bit from the doctor.
Yeah, I read in Entertainment Weekly they're talking about the Asian invasion in Hollywood. The Sony and a lot of these Japanese studios, a lot of companies are buying studios, and then a lot of the actors are Orientals, and then the studios are taking the actors and filming in the Orient because they want to keep the money in their own corporation. So they're taking them.